Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is May the 31st, and we are in Parshas Korach. We are on page 832. Last week, we discussed that Hashem was giving to Aaron the 24 gifts of the Kuhuna, the Chaf Daled Matnos Kuhuna. We actually listed them last week in quick succession. And now we'll go through the psukim that actually talk about giving those gifts to Aaron. As we mentioned last week, some of them are very clear, some of them need to be derived, and it's somewhat complex to figure out how each one of the 24 appears in this paragraph. We're not going to be doing that, to be picking out each of the 24, but we will get a general idea of what is going on over here as we go through the psukim. So we are on page 832, we're up to Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Vaydaber Hashem el Aaron, Hashem spoke to Aaron, Va'ani hine nasati lecha es mishmeres trumo soi, and behold, I have given to you the mishmeres, would mean the guarding, they translate it as the safeguard of my truma, lechol kadshei v'nei Yisrael, for all of that which is sanctified for the Jewish people, lecha nesatim lemashcha, for them I've given them to you lemashcha for as an important thing, as greatness. They translate that as distinction. Min ha'ei ulevanechan, for your children, l'chok alam, for a statute forever. So we're going to go through some of them now. These I'm going to give you. L'mashcha means for distinction. Zeya lecha mikodesh ha'kodashim min ha'esh, this will be for you from that which is the holy of holies, from the fire, meaning from karbonos. Kol karbonam, all of their karbonos. L'chol min chasam, all of their meal offerings. U'l'chol chatasam, and all of their sin offerings. U'l'chol hashamam, and all of their another type of sin offering. Asher yashivu li, that they will give to me. Kodesh kadashim l'cha hu u'levanecha, they are considered to be kadshei kadshim. They are the holiest of the sanctified items for you and for your sons. Now, this will include various types of karbanos like a chatas and an asham that are considered kadshei kadshim. They're considered to be the higher level of sanctification, the higher level of kedusha. It will also include all of the menachos, all of the meal offerings, including the omer and the shtei halechem that was brought on Shavuos, and the lechem hapanim, and also the menachos that were brought by regular Jews. So all of those things are considered kadshei kadshim. We talked about this in Parshios, Vayikra, and Tzav. Because they are kadshei kadshim, they are the higher level of kedusha. Therefore, Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Bekodesh HaKadoshim Tochalenu, you must eat them in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, this does not mean what we call the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, because that's a place where only Aaron could go and only on Yom Kippur. But this means it must be eaten in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Not in Yerushalayim, but in the Beis HaMikdash. Kol Zachar Yochalo, so all males may eat it. Only the male Kohanim may eat it, not the females, not their wives, not their daughters. Kodesh Yelach, they will be sanctified for you. Kadshei Kadshim can only be eaten by Zichrei Kuhuna, only by male Kohanim, and only in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Only those, of course, who are Tahar, who are pure and able to be in the Beis HaMikdash. So those are Kadshei Kadshim. That's the higher level. Vizel Lecha Trumas Matanam, and this is for you, the gift, their gift of Truma. L'chol tnufos b'nei Yisrael, for all the wavings of the Jewish people, meaning that which is waved in the Beis HaMikdash, waved meaning like we do with a lulav and esrog, they are parts of the animal that are waved. L'chol nesatim, to you I have given them, ulevanecha, and to your sons, v'liv nosecha, and to your daughters, itcha, with you, l'chol kalam, for a statue forever. Kol tahar b'veischa, yochal oso, all those who are tahar in your house may eat them. So this is referring to the Kanshim Kalim, the lower level of Kedusha, the lower level of Karbanos, that which is not as sanctified, not as strict, not as stringent, and that would be that which is given to the Kohen from the Shlamim, from a peace offering, and from a Toda, from a Thanksgiving offering. Those would go, there are certain parts of it would go to the Kohen. Those can be eaten by male and female Kohanim, and they can be eaten in the entire city of Yerushalayim, the old city, of course, not only in the Beis HaMikdash. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, Kol Chelev Yitzhar, V'chol Chelev Tirosh V'dagan, all, now Chelev means fat, but here it means like the choicest, the most, the juiciest of the Yitzhar. The Yitzhar would be the oil, the olives, and Chelev Tirosh V'dagan, that would be the choicest of the Tirosh, is the grapes, the wine, Dagan and the grains. So the best of those, reishi sum, their firsts, asher yitnu laHashem, that are given to Hashem, lechones atim, I have given to you. So this refers to truma, the truma that is taken off of the grain and of the wine and of the oil, that truma which a Yisrael has to give to a Kohen, that is sanctified, it goes to the Kohen, it is prohibited to be eaten by a non-Kohen, and it can be eaten by a Kohen anywhere, not only in Yerushalayim, but also in the rest of Eretz Yisrael, it can be eaten. And the amount that is given is, as we've talked about this before, would be somewhere between, somewhere around 2% would go to the Kohen. You can give 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th, depending on how generous you want to be when you give it. So that goes to the Kohen, and it can be eaten by his entire family, as long as they are tar, as long as they are pure. And it cannot be eaten by a Yisrael, as we mentioned. That's the truma, what we call truma gedola. Truma gedola means the truma from the large amount of grain. The first truma given, it's called truma gedola. There's another truma, which we'll have later, but this is called truma gedola. Another thing that goes to the Kohen, Bikurei kol asher bi'artsam, the first fruits from all that is in their land, asher yaviu l'Hashem, that is brought to Hashem, l'cha yesh shall be go to you, kol tahar b'veischa yochalenu, all who are tar, all who are pure in your house, may eat it. So here again, bikurim are like truma, they go to the Kohen, they can be eaten by anybody in the Kohen's household. Bikurim comes from the seven species of Eretz Yisrael, those seven special produce that Eretz Yisrael is blessed with. So that would be two of the grains, wheat and barley, and then it would be five different fruits. That would be grapes and dates and figs and pomegranates and olives. Those would all go to the Bikurim, the first fruits would go to the Kohen. Truma, from according to the Torah, is only taken off of grains. That would be all five of the grains, wheat, barley, spelt, oats, and rye, even those three grains that are not part of the Shiva Saminim, that are not the ones that are special for Eretz Yisrael, they are required to have truma taken off of them, and then the grapes and the olives, wine and oil. Those are only two of the five fruits that Eretz Yisrael is blessed with. So it's not the same list for truma as it is for bikurim. Now, rabbinically, the rabbis added many other types of fruits and vegetables, for that matter, that one has to take off truma for. But from the Torah, it's only that list. Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, Kol cherem b'Yisrael chayyeh, all cherem among the Jewish people shall go to you. Cherem is a type of oath that a person takes to give a type of a field to a Kohen. So if a person says this field should be a cherem, then it goes to the Kohanim. Kopeta rechem, all firstborn, l'chol basar of all flesh, ashe yakrivu laHashem, that are brought to Hashem, ba'adam uva behema, both amongst people and among animals, yielach shall be yours. So the Kohen gets the firstborn human being and also the firstborn animal. Meaning, animal doesn't mean wild animals, it means domesticated animals, that would be goats, sheep, and cows. So the firstborn, it would have to be a male firstborn, both of people and of those three types of animals, would go to the Kohen. However, ach, Pado sifta es bechor ha'adam, you shall redeem, or allow to be redeemed, the firstborn of people, which means that, which we'll see in a minute, how much is given. Ves bechor ha'behema tmeya tifta. And also, the firstborn of the non-kosher animal shall also be redeemed. This is referring to the pidyon peter chamor, the one non-kosher animal for which we have to give the firstborn to the Kohen, that would be the peter chamor, that would be the firstborn donkey. That should go to the Kohen, but it is redeemed with a sheep. A sheep is given to the Kohen in exchange, not necessarily a firstborn sheep, but just a regular sheep is given to the Kohen in exchange for the firstborn donkey. Just as we're about to say, we redeem the firstborn human beings as well. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16, Uftuyav, the redemption of the firstborn people, miben chodesh tifde, you redeem them when they are a month old, berkecha kesef chameshes shkalim b'shekel ha-kodesh, with the value of 5 shkalim, given that are in the value of the shekel ha-kodesh, of the sanctified shekel, Asrim Geira Hu, which comes out to 20 Geira. That's the amount that is given in exchange for the firstborn person. That's the amount that is given for the firstborn person. That is also the amount for which Yosef was sold. Yosef was sold for that amount, and therefore that's the amount that we redeem the firstborn son from the Kohen for the same amount. So the firstborn animal, that of either sheep, the firstborn male animal, that of either sheep, goats, or cows, is given to the Kohen. That is the property of the Kohen. If it does not have a mum, if it does not have a blemish, the Kohen offers it as a karban and eats part of it. And if it does have a mum, if it has a blemish, then the Kohen just slaughters it and eats it as a regular meal, not as a karban. Either way, a Kohen is not allowed to use the animal, neither for its shearings nor for plowing. The animal is off limits, except for eating. Can't use its milk either. It is only for eating. That's what the animal is for. It needs to be slaughtered and eaten either as a karban if it doesn't have a blemish, or as a regular meal if it does have a blemish and can't be offered as a karban. Firstborn donkey, we already said, gets redeemed for a sheep. Firstborn person gets redeemed for money. And it says when he's a month old, that is when the father comes to the Kohen and pays the Kohen money in exchange for his firstborn son. There is a difference of opinion exactly when that month is. When you count from the birth of a firstborn son until the month, at that point, when the baby is a month old, that's when you do pidyon haben, that's when you redeem. There is a little bit of a difference of opinion exactly how to count that month. And therefore, what we do is on the 31st day after the birth, including the day he was born, then that's the day that we do the pidyon haben. Typically, that's when it's done. It's typically not done at night. It is only done during the day. Usually there is a seuda, there's a festive meal, just like with a bris milah, and the redemption is done at that time. The money is given to the Kohen. The Kohen then the son becomes just a regular family member of the Yisrael. And that's typically what happens. Yud Zayin 17, Ach Bechor Shor, O Bechor Kesev, O Bechor A, or O Bechor A's, but the firstborn bull, or the firstborn sheep, or the firstborn goat, Lo Sifdeh, that shall not be redeemed, Kodesh Heim, they are sanctified. As damam tizrok al hamizbech, if they do not have a blemish, then the Kohen should throw the blood on the altar. Ves chelbam taktir, and the fat should be burned on the altar like a regular karban. Yishel reach nichoach laHashem, a fire offering for Hashem. The rest of it is eaten by the Kohen. Uvisaram yelach, the flesh of the firstborn animals should go to the Kohen. Just as one gives the chazeh, the chazeh is the chest of the animal, v'shok hayamin, and the right back leg also goes to the kohen. When one brings a karban shlamim, a regular peace offering to the kohen, then these two parts are given to the kohen, and the kohen can eat it in the base in Yerushalayim, and so can the rest of his family. So too, the firstborn also is kadshim kalim. It is the reduced level of kedusha, and it can be eaten by the whole family anywhere in Yerushalayim. And that's another one of the chaf dalid of the 24 gifts. Is this this chazeat tnufan shokaimin? These parts of the carbon that go to the kohen. Kol trumos hakadoshim asheyarimu bnei Yisrael Hashem, all of the trumos hakadoshim, all that is separated from the karbanos. This is not including anything other than what we said before. It's a repeat. It's now generalizing. Asheyarimu bnei Yisrael Hashem, that are removed by the Jews for Hashem. Nasati lecha, I've given to you, ulevanecha, v'livnosecha, itcha lecha kolam, to your sons, to your daughters, with you as a statute forever. Beris melach olam hi, it is a covenant of salt forever. It is a covenant of salt forever. Lefnei Hashem, before Hashem, lecha ulezarecha, itach, for you and for your children with you. Vayomer Hashem al Aaron, Hashem said to Aaron, Be'artzam lo sinchol, in their land, in Israel, you shall not inherit, you shall not get regular land, v'chelek lo yelecha v'socham, and you shall not get a portion among them, that's the spoils of war, you don't get that. Ani chalkecha v'nachaloscha, I, Hashem, am your portion and your inheritance, b'soch b'nei Yisrael, among the Jewish people. And so, the Jewish people have the Kohen does not have a portion with the Jewish people, but rather not the regular portion. He doesn't have regular land in Eretz Yisrael. Rather, he has all of these gifts that were given to the Kohanim. There are some cities that the Kohanim get in Eretz Yisrael, but not regular land. And Hashem is their portion. And we say this is a bris, this is a covenant of salt, which we will discuss momentarily. We have a question.
So is the chamar the only domesticated, not kosher animal?
There are other domesticated, non-kosher animals, like a horse. One could argue a pig, maybe a camel. But
why is it that the chamor needs to be redeemed and none of these other ones?
Yes, so Chazal say Rashi brings it in Parashas Bo that because the chamor, the donkey, is what helped us carry all the booty out of Mitzrayim. So therefore, the donkey specifically is associated with Yetzias Mitzrayim, and all of the Bechor issues have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. The other reason is because the Mitzrayim are compared to donkeys. It says, Asher Besar Chamorim Besaram. They are compared to donkeys for whatever reason. So a donkey is specifically the only non-kosher animal that has the halacha of bechor. Now, all of these 24, gifts to the kohen are considered to be a bris melach, a covenant of salt. So why a covenant of salt? So let me read you the Rashi. Rashi says, Karas bris im Aaron, Hashem cut a covenant with Aaron, bidavar habari, with something which is, literally means healthy, but it means that it is, it goes on, it's strong, umiskayim, and it lasts, umavri es acherim, and it makes other things last, gives other things health. So it is a bris melach, it is a covenant of salt, that just as salt will never spoil, so too this covenant will never spoil. If you want something in the physical world that symbolizes something which is ongoing, something which is that does not spoil, that has staying power. And not only does it have staying power, but it causes other things to have staying power, and that is salt. Salt is that which symbolizes staying power, that it doesn't change. It It preserves, it lasts, and it preserves other things. There may be other things in the world that have been around for a very long time and will remain for a very long time. Some mountains, perhaps, oceans. However, the salt is the thing that makes other things last. And therefore, this covenant, Hashem is saying, this is my special covenant with Aaron. It will not change. It was challenged in Parashas Korach. And therefore, my covenant is with Aaron is like salt in that it will not change. It is permanent and it will last forever. So no one should ever challenge Aaron again for the right of the kahuna. So that is the 24 gifts of the kahuna. Now we move into the rest of Shevet Levi, which we mentioned before that they assist Aaron in what he's doing, but we didn't talk about what the Levium get as part of their job. So the Pasuk says, V'livnei Levi, Pasuk Chavala, verse 21, V'livnei Levi, and to the children of Levi, Hine nasati komaser b'Yisrael enachala. I have given all the maaser, all the tithes of Yisrael as an inheritance. Chelef avoda sama sherhoi heimovdim, it is in exchange for the service that they are serving. Es avodas o amoid, the service in the Mishkan. So they get the maaser. V'lo yikruvu od b'nei Yisrael al ha-moed, and the Jews shall no longer get close to the Mishkan, l'aseis chet lamus, that to carry the sin to die. That will no longer happen because the Levim are going to prevent that from happening. V'avad ha-Levi hu, and this Levi shal serve, es avodas o ha-moed, the service of the Mishkan, v'heim yisu avonam, and they, the Levim, will carry their sin, the sin of the Jewish people. The Levim are responsible to prevent the Jewish people from getting too close to the Mishkan. If the Jews get too close, the punishment will also be on the Levim for not having prevented the Jews from getting too close. Chukas olam l'doroseichem, this is a statute forever, for all your generations. Uvesoch b'nei Yisrael, and among the Jewish people, lo yin chalu na chala, they, the Levim, shall not get any inheritance. Kis masar b'nei Yisrael, because the tithes of the Jewish people, asheyorimu la'Hashem truma, that are separated from Hashem as truma. We'll discuss this word truma in a moment. Nasati la'Levim le'nachala, I have given to the Levim as an inheritance. Al kena marti lahem, therefore I have said to them, besoch b'nei Yisrael, among the Jewish people, lo yun chalu nachala, they shall not inherit an inheritance. So the Levim get the miser. That's what they get. Now, there are several maisers that a person has to take off of their grain. After Bikurim is taken off, and after Truma is taken off, they take off several things. So one of them is maiser, which we call maiser Rishon, the first maiser. That is what is given to the Levi, the maiser Rishon. There is also maiser Sheni, and sometimes maiser Ani. Those are not given to the Levi. But when the Torah uses the term maiser over here, it is referring to what we call maiser Rishon. That way of breaking it down, Maiser Rishon, Maiser Sheni, Maiser Ani, those words are conventional words made up by the Chachamim to differentiate between the Maisros. The Torah never uses the phrase Maiser Rishon, Maiser Sheni, Maiser Ani. The Torah just says Maiser. Here, the Maiser, the tithe that we're talking about, is the Maiser Rishon, the first one, which goes to the Levi. Now, Maiser is not like Truma. Maiser is not prohibited to a non-Levi. A non-Levi is allowed to eat Maiser. That means that if I have Maiser and I give it to a Levi, that Levi can invite me over for dinner and we can eat the Maiser. That's fine. If I give Truma to a Kohen, that Kohen may not invite me over for dinner to eat the Truma. That Truma is usher to me because I'm not a Kohen. But the Maiser is not usher to me even though I'm not a Levi. But it has to be given to the Levi. If I keep it for myself, then it's stealing. I have to give it to the Levi. It's the Levi's property. The Levi can choose to do with it as he wishes. However, as we're going to learn in the next paragraph, the Levi is going to have to give a portion of that Maaser to the Kohen. Meaning, I give Truma to the Kohen. Then I take off 10% of what's left, and I give it to the Levy. The Levy's going to have to take from that 10% a certain amount and give it to the Kohen. Until the Levy does that, until the Levy does what he's supposed to do with his Miser, that Miser is prohibited, both to me, the non-Levy, and to the Levy. The Miser I give to the Levy may not be eaten by anybody, including the Levy, until the Levy does what he has to do to the Miser, which is in the next paragraph. That is why the word Truma is used here in Pasuk Chavdal in verse 24, referring to the Miser. Even the Miser is not Truma. But because the Miser is currently, when I hand it to the Levy, prohibited, even to the Levy, therefore it is called Truma until he does what he needs to do with it, which we will discuss, please God, in the next paragraph. So that is why it gets the term Truma. So I give Miser to the Levy, and that becomes the Levy's property. Now, before we discuss what the Levy is supposed to do with the Miser, let us point out that this paragraph that we just read mixes together several ideas. First of all, it says that the Levy, in exchange for his service in the Beis HaMikdash, gets Miser. It also says the Levy does not get a portion with the rest of the Jewish people. And then it also says that the responsibility of making sure the Jews don't get too close to the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash is on the Levy's head, and if the Jews do get too close, that sin is not only on the Jewish people, but it's also on the Levim, because they didn't do their job to keep the Jews away. Now, this means that we have a responsibility on the Levim. We talked about this last time. We're going to expand the idea a little bit further here. The Levim and the Kohanim have a job. Now, the Kohanim have more of a job than the Levi because the Kohanim have to actually work in the Beis HaMikdash. The Levim's sole purpose in the Beis HaMikdash is to assist the Kohanim, which a primary part of that is to keep the Jewish people from getting too close. In fact, even the assistance the Levim do for the Kohanim is really so that nobody else does it. Meaning the Levim do this assistance, not everybody else. The Levim's job is to be that buffer between the Jews, the rest of the Jewish people, and the Beis HaMikdash slash the Kohanim. They're supposed to be the middlemen, which will prevent people from crossing lines and getting too close. We know that there is a general rule in the Torah, which we learned before in Parashas Kedoshim, of hochiach tochiach asam yisecha, that we are to admonish our fellow Jews. When we see someone doing something wrong, we have a responsibility to admonish them. At its base level, without any explanation whatsoever, that means that if you see someone doing something wrong, you are required to go to that person and wave your finger at that person and say, you're not allowed to do that. That is a requirement on every Jew to prevent every other Jew from doing something wrong. Now, we know that that method doesn't usually work, certainly not in our day and age. In a previous generation, it may have worked more effectively, but in our generation, that method doesn't work. And to give criticism when the criticism is not going to help and in fact may actually make things worse, so that's counterproductive. Nevertheless, we are still required to prevent people from doing sins, however we can, meaning that if we can think of a way of criticizing in a manner that will be accepted by the other person, then we're required to do so. If we can think of a way of preventing the sin to begin with in a manner that there won't be a need for criticism because the sin will never have happened, we're required to do that. So we are required to have our eyes and ears open, not just for ourselves, but for the entire Jewish people. That's a requirement on all of us, every single one of us. However, there are certain situations where each one of us is given specific tasks of making sure someone else does not do the wrong thing. For example, parents are required to raise their children in a manner that the children will keep the Torah. That means that parents have a greater responsibility to make sure their children do the right thing than anybody else does. That's directly the parents' responsibility. A teacher, a rebbe, a rabbi, a rav, The people in those positions, because of the positions that they occupy, have a greater responsibility to ensure that people don't do things wrong. That's a greater responsibility. Beis Din has a great responsibility. I think I've mentioned this to you in the past. This is a little known halacha in Shulchan Aruch that people don't like to talk about, but it actually says as a black on white open and shut halacha in Shulchan Aruch that Beis Din is required to appoint policemen to go around into the parks and into the congregating areas on Yom Tov to make sure men and women are not improperly socializing. That is a requirement on Beis Din to send appointed policemen around as the Tznius police to make sure men and women are not improperly socializing during the Yomim Tovim, since Yom Tov is a common time of improper socializing because people are off from work, people are walking around, people are enjoying themselves, and that can happen. So Beis Din has a greater responsibility than a regular person to make sure that people do the right thing. The Levim were given a very direct responsibility to make sure that the rest of the Jewish people do not get too close when it comes to the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. Now Hashem says, how is this going to work? How is it going to be? We discussed last time, how do you give them that responsibility when they themselves can't cross lines? So how do you make it that they will be the police, but at the same time they will keep themselves from crossing the lines? We talked about that last time. But here we have another element, which is this. When you take a group of people and you say, you now have the responsibility to prevent others from sinning, that's very difficult to do if those people are part of the general society. When you have people who everybody else looks at as being just one of the guys, it's very difficult for that person who's one of the guys to be the person to stand up and say, whoa, you can't go past this line. That's a very hard thing to do. When you have people in Shul who are appointed as the ones who are going to go around and try to get people not to talk in Shul during davening, for example, that's a very difficult thing to do. Most people don't like that job. It's thankless. They end up becoming public enemies. Nobody likes them. It's hard to be one of the guys and yet keep people from doing the wrong thing. It's a hard thing to do. When you have a person who's in a position of authority, like the rabbi of a shul, so you expect it. You expect that the rabbi of the shul is occasionally going to say, hey, what you're doing now is not correct. It's improper. You expect the rabbi to do that. Hopefully he'll do it in a way that can be accepted. But we can hear it better from the rabbi because that's his position. That's his position. But the rabbi is not one of the guys. The rabbi is a little bit aloof. And he's got to be. If he's not, then he loses the ability to be able to be that person who's going to be the bulwark to stop things from people from doing things that are wrong. In order for the Levim to properly do their job, which is to stand up and say to the Yisrael, whoa, you got to stop right there. You can't walk past that line. Or you may not handle that object. Or whatever, something along those lines, the Levim have to be somewhat aloof. In order for the Levim to be somewhat aloof, after all, they're not all rabbis. So in what way are they somewhat aloof? Says Hashem, you know how you're going to be aloof, Levim? You're not going to be like the rest of the Jewish people. You don't have a portion with the rest of the Jewish people. I am providing your portion in the form of the Maaser. You're not one of the guys. To a certain extent, the Levim, and especially the Kohanim, are not one of the guys. That's a difficult thing for us to accept, both the non-Kohanim and Levim, to accept that there is a class among us that are really a little bit above us. And it's also difficult for the Kohanim and the Levim. They want to be one of the guys. They don't want to be set up on a pedestal where they're now required to be the police. That's a difficult place to be. But that is a requirement. If you are born a Levi and you're born a Kohen especially, then you have been given a special position, and that position puts you in a place where you are required to be a little bit aloof, where you will therefore have the ability to tell a person, hey, you got to stop right there. Now, it doesn't carry over to all areas of halacha. When it comes to, let's say, keeping Shabbos, then the Levim are just like everybody else. Everybody's required to make sure everybody else keeps Shabbos. But that is as one of the guys. But when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, the Levim are not one of the guys. They are considered separate. They're considered a higher level. And that gives them the authority to say, Ad Kan, until here, you can't go any further. That's a difficult concept for us Americans to accept. The modern world does not like these classes, but we have them in Klal Yisrael, and they are a requirement. And when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, that is going to be in full force, whether we like it or not. Now, the next Pasuk Chaf Hey, verse 25, we now get to what the Levim are supposed to do with the Meiser that they get from the rest of the Jewish people. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lema, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Vela Levim tedaber, and you shall speak to the Levim, Velmartalahim, and say to them, when you take Meiser, the tithe, from the rest of the Jewish people, that I have given to you from them as your inheritance, you need to separate from the Meiser a truma of Hashem, maser mina maser, a tithe from the tithe, 10% of the 10%. The Levi has to take off 10% of the 10%, and that will go to the Kohen. That Meiser min ha-Meiser, or as Chazal call it, Trumas Meiser. The Torah doesn't call it Trumas Meiser. The Torah calls it Meiser min ha-Meiser, the tenth from the tenth. In the Mishnah, it's called Trumas Meiser. That has a din of regular Truma, meaning that the Levi gets 10%, meaning I take 10% of my grain and I give it to the Levi. The Levi then takes 10% of what I gave him, which is 1% of my total grain. So he takes 10% of that, of what I gave him, and he has to give that to the Kohen. So let's give it numbers. If I have 100 sheaves of wheat, so I give 10 of those sheaves to the Levi, that's my Meiser. He in turn takes one of those sheaves of wheat and gives it to the Kohen. The remaining 9 are the Meiser that the Levi keeps. The one that he gives to the Kohen is Trumas Meiser. And that Trumas Meiser has a halacha of Truma. The 9 that the Levi keeps can be eaten by anybody. The Levi can invite me over for dinner, as we mentioned before, to eat those 9. The one that he gives to the Kohen, no one may eat it except for the Kohanim and their families. The Levi may not eat it. Certainly I cannot eat it. Only the Kohen can eat it. It is like a regular din of Truma. That is Meiser min ha-Meiser. That is Trumas Meiser. We have a question here.
So the Kohen today still has restrictions about who the Kohen can marry. And so there are some halachic ramifications for the Kohen today as far as differentiating him from other people, maybe like a pedestal idea. What about for the Levi today? I know the Aliyah, they can be Ola as a Levi, but what, anything else?
There is almost nothing that differentiates a Levi today. The one thing is the Aliyah in Shul and also washing the Kohanim's hands. There is even a discussion, if you are in a place where there are no Kohanim, does the Levi have any Kedusha whatsoever? So that if there's no Kohen in Shul, should you give the first Aliyah to a Levi? Our practice is we generally do that. One is not required to do that, but there's even a question whether there's any point at all to doing that. If you're at a table and they're giving the Mezumin, so you're supposed to give the Kohen to lead the benching. If there's no Kohen, but there's a Levi, should you give the Levi? Some say yes, because the Levi is like second. And some say no, that the Levi's chashivus, that the importance of the Levi is only as the assistant to the Kohen. And therefore, if there's no Kohen, the Levi has no chashivus, no importance more than anybody else. So today, we do not have a Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, the job of the Levi, which is to be the assistant of the Kohen, is almost non-existent. So therefore, we don't have anything that distinguishes the Levi over the Kohen, as opposed to the Kohanim themselves, who their Kedusha, their sanctity, is inherent. It's not as the assistant to anybody else. It is an inherent Kedusha. So as you mentioned, we do have some restrictions on Kohanim that still exist today, particularly in who they are allowed to marry. And also the halacha v'kidashto, that we have to sanctify the kohanim, that still applies today. They're not allowed to become tamei, they can't go to funerals, and we are required to also give them the first aliyah and other things like that. We're supposed to put them in front because they are the kohanim. Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27, v'nechshav lachem trumaschem. And this truma that you, Levim, are going to take off of your Meiser, it's going to be considered kadagan min hagaren v'chamleya min hayakev. It's going to be like the grain from the granary, and like the wine and the oil that comes from the vats of wine and oil, meaning it's going to be like those things, like the truma that was already discussed before that the Yisrael gives to the Kohen. Your trumas Meiser is going to have the same halacha. Kain tarimu gam atem trumas Hashem, so too you will also take off the truma of Hashem, mikom asros seichem, from all of your meiser, asher tikhu me'es b'nei Yisrael, that you take from the Jewish people, unis atem imenu es trumas Hashem le'aron ha'koin, and you will give the truma of Hashem to Aaron. Mikom matnos seichem, from all of your gifts, tarimu es kol trumas Hashem, you will take off all of the truma, from all of it the truma of Hashem, mikol chelbo, from all of its fat, which means from the best part, as mikdasho mimenu, the sanctified part from it. This sounds a little redundant, but the Gemara goes through and derives various rules from all of the redundancies. V'yamarta aleim, you, Moshe, shall say to the Levim, barim chemes chalbo mimenu, that when you remove the chelev, you'll remove the fat, which means the truma, from the miser, then what happens to the rest, the remaining nine that we mentioned before? Then v'nechshav la'alviim, that will be considered to the Levim kisfuas goren v'chisfuas yakev, like the grain and like the wine and oil, meaning it's like regular grain, regular wine and oil. You can keep it, you can do with it as you wish. You can even invite over a Yisrael for dinner and you can eat it together. V'achaltem oso b'chol makom, you can eat it anywhere you want, even in a graveyard. Theoretically, it's not, there's no problem of tuma with meiser. Atem uveischem, you and your household, ki sachar hu lachem, it is your wages, chelef avodaschem bo'amoid, in exchange for your service in the Mishkan. Velos hisu alav chet, and you will not have any, you will not carry any sin, barim chemes chalbo mimenu, when you remove the chelef, which means the truma from it, meaning, if you don't remove the truma, there'll be a sin. So you have to remove the truma from it, v'as kachev v'nei Yisrael, and the sanctified parts of the Bnei Yisrael, lo sechalalu, you will not defame it, velo samusu, and you will not die. So there we have the Trumas Meiser. So I want to go through right now, just give a general case for what happens with grain, so we understand how it works. We've done this before, but this is important, and in it I want to also bring out another very important point with this whole idea of Trumas and Maestros. So I'm a farmer, I'm a Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not a Levi, I'm not a Kohen, and I grow, let's say, wheat. So wheat is chayev in truma and maaser. It also is chayev in bikurim. Wheat is one of the shivas haminim. It's one of the seven species of Eretz Yisrael. So I grow wheat. And let's say I grow wheat. We'll make it a nice even number. And I grow 100 bushels of wheat. That's not a very big number, but let's use that number just for simplicity's sake. So I grow 100 bushels of wheat. So those 100 bushels, the first few sheaves that grow, even before they're made into bushels, that's going to be bikurim. Exactly how much of it is bikurim, that's not so clear how much of the grain as it's growing is taken off as bikurim. So we're not going to discuss the amount for bikurim. It's a very small amount that is bikurim. So I take off the bikurim that goes to the Kohen as we discussed. Now I have 100 bushels of wheat. So from those 100 bushels, I have to first give truma, what we call truma gedola. I have to give that to the Kohen. How much do I give? Well, if I'm very generous, I give 1/40. If I am an average person, I give 1/50. And if I'm stingy, I give 1/60. So let's say I'm an average person, 1/50 of 100 bushels, that's 2%. So I take 2 bushels and I give that to the Kohen. Those 2 bushels that the Kohen gets are sanctified. I may not eat them, a Levi may not eat them. The only ones who could eat them are the Kohen and the Kohen's family. That is it. Now I'm left with 98 bushels. of those 98 bushels, I have to give 10% to the Levi. That is an exact number. There's no choices. It's not 10%, 11% or 9%. It is exactly 10%. Therefore, I have to take off 9.8 bushels. So I take 9 bushels and 8 tenths of one of the other bushels. 9.8 bushels. And I give that to the Levi. So the Levi now has 9.8 bushels as his miser. He has to take off 10% of that. Well, 10% of that is 0.98, which is slightly under a whole bushel. So he takes a whole bushel, takes 98% of that whole bushel, and gives that to the Kohen. So the Kohen ends up with 2 bushels that I gave him, plus almost a third bushel that the Levi gave him. And those 2.98 bushels, almost the entire thing, almost 3 bushels, is considered to be Truma and Truma Smeiser. They have the same rule, which is that they are prohibited to anybody but a Kohen and his family. The Levi is left with 9.8 minus 0.98, which comes out to, if you're doing the math, it's 8.88. That's what he's left with. That is, if I got that right, I think. Maybe, no, it's 8.92, excuse me. 8.92, that's what he's left with, the Levi. He is left with just under 9 bushels worth of miser. Those bushels belong to the Levi. However, anybody can eat from them. He can invite me over for dinner. We could eat together. He could give it as shalach manas if he wants. It could be part of his gift. It's his to do as he pleases with that miser. I am left with the rest. Right now, what I have left is a little bit under 90 bushels. And those are mine. There's still going to have to be Meiser Sheni that is removed in some years, and in some years Meiser Ani, which is another tithe, another 10%. I'm going to have to take off either as Meiser Sheni, which I have to eat in Yerushalayim, or as Meiser Ani, which goes to the poor person. So that is what happens to the grain in Eretz Yisrael. Now, there came a time in history that we had a problem with Amoratzim. Amoratzim are generally unlearned people who are ignorant, who are not learned, and the problem was that they did not treat the grains properly. And there was a concern that grain grown by an Am Haaretz might not have been tithed properly. If you buy grain from a person who is a chaver, someone who is known to be learned and keep the Torah, so then you can be sure that he's already taken off all that needs to be taken off when he gives you that grain. However, the if you buy grain from an Am Haaretz, well, then it's not so clear what exactly is the status of that grain. So, therefore, at a certain point in history, Chazal instituted something called demai. Demai is grain purchased from an Am Haaretz, from someone who is unlearned. Now, we are not concerned that the Am Haaretz will not take off truma, because truma is a scary thing to keep for oneself, because truma is prohibited to anybody who is a non-Kohen. And the punishment for eating truma for a non-Kohen is Misa Bidei Shamayim, death at the hands of heaven. People are scared of Truma. Therefore, we're not concerned that the Am Haaretz will have neglected to take off Truma. We are concerned that the Am Haaretz would have neglected to take off Meiser, because Meiser is not punishable by death. In fact, anybody could eat the Meiser. It's only theft to hold on to the Meiser and not give the Meiser. Now, what the Am Haaretz doesn't realize is that the Meiser is also punishable with Misa Bidei Shamayim, death by the hands of heaven, because the Levi hasn't taken off the Trumas Meiser, because there is another Truma that has to be taken off. The mistake that the Am Haaretz is making is he believes that as long as I haven't separated Meiser from my grain, then there is no chiyuv, there is no obligation of Trumas Meiser. The Am Haaretz mistakenly believes that the requirement of Trumas Meiser only starts after I've separated the Meiser. So if I put my head in the ground and don't separate the Meiser, well, then there is no Trumas Meiser here, and the whole thing is permitted to be eaten. And that's what we're concerned that the Am Haaretz might have done. So therefore, if someone buys grain from an Am Haaretz, they need to separate Meiser and Trumas Meiser. That is because of the fear that the Am Haaretz did not separate Trumas Meiser, didn't separate Meiser from his grain. And the difference, again, between the Truma that we're not worried that the Am Haaretz neglected and the Meiser that we are worried is because of this fear that everybody has that the Truma is dangerous for a non-Kohen to eat. Now, even after all of this is done, and I have my sheaves of wheat, my bundles of wheat, I have my all these bundles that I have, it's all great, and now I take the wheat and I grind it, I make it into flour, and now I bring it home, and my wife wants to make challah for Shabbos. So she takes the flour, she mixes it with water, and she creates a dough. And as you know, at that point, if there's enough of it, then there's going to be yet another requirement to take off, and that's going to be challah. Challah is going to have to be taken off from the dough. Now bear in mind, this dough is made from flour, which comes from wheat, that has already had truma and maaser removed from it. Nevertheless, there is yet another thing that I have to take off and give to the Kohen, and that is the challah. The challah is separated, and the challah is given to the Kohen. Today we don't give it to the Kohen, today we burn it, but in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we separate it, and we give it to the Kohen. That challah has the same law as Truma, in that it is prohibited to anybody. It is prohibited to the Yisrael, it is prohibited to a Levi, it is only permitted to a Kohen and his family, just like Truma, and eating challah, for someone who is not allowed to eat it, the punishment is Misa Bidei Shamayim, is death at the hands of heaven. It's a very serious halacha of not eating challah. So challah is like Truma. So even though all of us collectively, since we're not farmers, we rarely, and we're not in Eretz Yisrael, so we rarely have the halacha of Truma, real halachas of Truma. Could be if you're in Eretz Yisrael and you buy things that that there may be a suspicion that Truma and Maisus weren't taken off yet, then you might have to do it. But typically, we don't have that halacha, certainly not a daraisa, a Torah law, but in our own kitchens, when we make enough dough, then there can be a halacha of challah, which has the same halacha as Truma. If you are nervous about that, at least you can you can be a little bit relieved to know that challah in chutz la'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, does not have the same severity as challah inside Eretz Yisrael. Dough made outside Eretz Yisrael is not the same severity as inside Eretz Yisrael. We still separate it, we burn it, but it is not nearly as stringent as challah in Eretz Yisrael. So that concludes Parshas Korach, and Mirtz Hashem, next time we'll begin Parshas Chukas. If anybody has any more questions, go ahead.
So it's an interesting thing. Two things are very interesting. One is the challah. If you don't have the right amount, then there's no truma from it. And only if then it is the right amount that it is. So and it's not inherently the thing that the Kohen is coming to the Kohen if you happen not to make that much of flour at one point.
That's correct.
So the let's say kedusha of it, or the restriction, prohibition about it, has to be when it's a certain amount, which is very interesting. Which is by the same thing that you're saying, that the whole reason of the Am Haaretz is that if the Levi doesn't give, then it's the Levi's obligation to give. It's not your obligation to give the Trumas Maaser. It's the Levi's obligation, but still it makes your food, your grain have an impact when it's not even the thing that you have to do.
Right.
He has to do it.
That's right. It's still tevel. It's still considered to be non-tithed if the Trumas Meiser wasn't taken off. That's a good point. Even though it's not my responsibility to take it off, it's the Levi's responsibility, yet it still creates interest. That's correct. And the challah also, you're correct, that there has to be an amount to be chayev. There it seems that since the chiyuv of challah is in the dough form, we're already talking about food that is ready to be eaten, almost ready to be eaten, as opposed to wheat, sheaves of wheat, which are not processed at all. So it almost seems that the Torah doesn't require challah to be taken off, except for something which is ready to be eaten as a meal. And if it's too little, so we don't look at that as considered to be like a real a meal. As it says, it's got to be the size of the omer, which was the size of the mun that a person had daily in the midbar. So it seems that it has to do with that idea of being ready to eat food, as opposed to truma and meiser, which is taken off of unprocessed raw foods. That's where the trumas and meisers are taken off. But it's a well taken point.
The thing that's sort of bothering me, whatever, is that it seems like the grain doesn't inherently have the kedusha or have the, you know, the prohibition in it. It all depends how you do it and what, you know, like. But we're saying that it does. I guess maybe I'm Amaretz, but that I'm thinking, okay, so I did my thing or I didn't do my thing, because really, let's just say you give to the Levi, and he doesn't. So what happens to the rest? You know, you gave to the Levi, but he didn't.
Yeah. So then if I give to the Levi and he doesn't take off what he's supposed to take off, his part is usher, mine is mutter. Because I got rid of...
Interesting.
Yeah, I got rid of the part that has the part that's supposed to go to the Kohen. I gave that to the lady.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, Mitzvah Hashem, we will continue next week.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.